This is Radio Superior 1944, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1944. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now into the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice of the head of the Great Lakes Station, KUWS. Jack McKenna saying, hasten the homecoming and buy victory bonds. It's 6 p.m. Standard Wartime, Sunday, December 24th, 1944. Lou Martin is standing by with the latest from the battle raging in Western Europe, plus a bulletin about band leader Glenn Miller. The Fair and Square kids will be in to get us in the Christmas spirit, and we've got Yuletide music just for you. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Downtown Superior Businesses, who wish one and all a very Merry Christmas. Good evening, Lou. Just one shopping day left until Christmas.
I assume that means that you'll get started tomorrow.
Oh, Natch.
Merry Christmas to you, Jack, and good listeners. Bandleader Glenn Miller is missing in action. The famed American orchestra leader, who had been conducting Army Air Force bands since October of 42, didn't show up in Paris after a flight from London 1 week ago. Major Alton Glenn Miller's plane disappeared, and Allied headquarters says that no trace of the plane has been found. No members of the band were on board. If he isn't found by next week, he'll be listed officially as missing in action. The German army continues its advances in Western Europe, sweeping past Luxembourg, threatening the entire Sudan in France. We begin our shortwave radio world news roundup from Paris.
This is France. Harrison Salisbury reporting from the City of Light. Powerful German armored units smashed 40 miles across Luxembourg into Belgium. They're 29 miles from historic Sedan, French territory. It is through Sedan that the German Blitzkrieg of 1940 swept through to swift victory in France and the Low Countries. There is genuine fear here that this may happen again. Also, Nazi forces of General von Rundstedt have bypassed the Belgian city of Bastogne, but are now fighting to take that strategic city. A field dispatch says the Germans have entered Bastogne, but Americans there are fighting back. This news comes to us 48 hours after it has happened. There is a cloak of secrecy for news during this crisis. Last report of the northern German wedge has it 40 miles into Belgium west of Malmedy. Although Allied headquarters is not saying, Berlin Radio is reporting that Lieutenant General George S. Patton's Third Army has wheeled around from its winter offensive. Patton is heading toward Bastogne. In Paris, this is Harrison Salisbury calling Bastogne. Come in, Max Jordan.
Hello, this is Belgium. Max Jordan here in Bastogne. We are under fire and under siege by German panzer units. General Anthony McAuliffe is scraping together everything he can for the defense of this city, situated on a key highway, a gateway to the western port of Antwerp. Tremendous losses in men and material are evident from this eight-day battle against the Nazi counteroffensive. U.S. Army units are strong as battalions have been cut off and then cut to pieces. We are seeing the stragglers here, although some of these battalions have been wiped out to a man. GIs here are holding out, though, with a determined effort to stop the Nazi bulge from becoming a breakout. Just as bad as the fog, it has grounded the massive Allied Air Force for 3 days now, preventing this city from being resupplied with arms and ammunition, although it lifted briefly this morning. During that time, super fortresses took off from England and hammered German targets. We are sealed off here. Allied command has given no further word on a German column which veered 13 miles northwest of Bastogne and reached as far as La Rocca. An Allied communique does say the three towns of Malmedy, Saint-Vith, and Stavelot are in danger of being overrun, but are still in American hands. The doughboys here are determined to make a stand against General von Rundstedt's steel wedge. In Bastogne, this is Max Jordan calling London. Come in, England.
This is London calling. Bud Miller, your correspondent. A heavy blanket of snow along the western front has assured a white Christmas for America's fighting men. And in that respect alone, it'll be like a traditional Yuletide. great proportion of the GIs are fighting for their lives. Some face the prospect of spending Christmas surrounded by Germans. Turkey has been taken to the front lines for every U.S. soldier, but for those on the battle lines. It'll be canned rations for them again. Their turkey will be saved for them when they come out of battle, if they come out of battle. Some Germans may feast on American turkey, too, as many supplies have been captured in their winter offensive. Hundreds of thousands of Christmas parcels from home have reached troops in France, but a few troops have gotten nothing. For the British Second Army, the Christmas dinner consists of canned chicken, fig pudding, a box of cigarettes, and candy with a small flask of rum. In Britain, many English families will share their rations with Americans who are far from home. Birmingham alone, 500 soldiers will be entertained in private homes as these allies share another war Christmas together. In London, this is Webb Miller calling Soviet Russia. Come in, Moscow.
This is Moscow calling. Eddie Gilmore reporting. The Red Army's great winter offensive is underway. An official Soviet announcement that 101 German tanks were destroyed 2 days ago confirms a German report that a major Soviet military engagement is underway. The weather is perfect for the Red Army. The Eastern Front is frozen solid with hard, firm snow. This is the kind of weather Russian divisions use to make slashing attacks against the Nazi troops, which are not as well equipped. The Russian High Command did not say where the Nazi panzers were destroyed. The Germans, however, report that a massive Soviet force of 270,000 winter-hardened Russian troops is on the move in Latvia, where there is an equal number of German troops along the Baltic. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore calling the Pacific. Come in, Philippines.
This is the Central Pacific, Daryl Berrigan with the forward headquarters in the Philippines. Japan's aerial candle is burning at both ends today. They are fighting battles over homeland skies against B-29 Super Fortress bombing raids on Mitsubishi aircraft factories and above Philippine battlefronts. 39 Nipponese planes were destroyed yesterday in a growing Yank air offensive. American infantrymen are fighting in northwestern Leyte, pushing a disorganized enemy from this island into the sea. Forward elements of the 77th Division pouring out of the Omak Valleys advanced 3 miles along a road to Palampong. These Allied units are mopping up Jap pockets of resistance. Yesterday, they killed some 1,500 enemy soldiers, less than the daily average of recent fighting. Naval support of this Philippine operation is paying a hard price. Reports from Japanese radio, but not confirmed, from General Douglas MacArthur's headquarters, indicate suicide bombers are crashing into U.S. warships off Mindoro Island. On Leyte Island in the Philippines, this is Daryl Berrigan reporting.
American B-29 Super Fortresses also bombed aircraft plants in Nagoya, Japan, flying from U.S. air bases in Saipan. Even though the War Department reports not a single B-29 was lost, returning airmen report 150 Japanese interceptors made one of the fiercest fighter attacks that they have faced. Three war correspondents will get Purple Hearts, one posthumously. Naval Secretary James Forrestal awarded the medal to Jack Singer of the International News Service. Singer was killed when the aircraft carrier Wasp was lost in the South Pacific. United Press correspondent Joel James Custer lost an eye in the naval battle at Savo Island. Custer was aboard the cruiser Astoria August the 8th and 9th, 1942, as part of the first American offensive in the Solomon Islands. Forrestal also authorized a Purple Heart for Charles McMurtry of the Associated Press. KUWS News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this message from our sponsor.
I'm going to say Merry Christmas to a lot of people tonight from Bridgman's at 1106 Belknap. Christmas store hours, they'll close Christmas Eve, 6 p.m. Keep that in mind. Open from 9:30 to 3 p.m. on Christmas Day. And then we have another one, too, for you. Merry Christmas to all. Closed Sunday and Monday, the Black Cat Cafe. What's Ray going to do? Holy smokes, he's going to be hungry. He goes there for his meals and coffee and everything. Closed Sunday and Monday, December 25th and 24th, and... Geez, I'm sorry, Ray. And how about a Merry Christmas from Joy Ying Lo to all friends and patrons of this fine restaurant, Chinese and American foods. Apparently, they're going to just stay open, period. Joy Ying Lo, Merry Christmas. And that's it, Lou.
Several upstate soldiers have been killed in Germany. A Port Wing woman has been notified that her brother was killed in Germany. Mrs. Harold Larvik was notified that her brother Palmer was killed while on duty with the Scout Division of the 88th Division. John Harrelson of Wagon Landing got a telegram that his brother Harold Harrelson was killed in action in Germany. The Naval Department told Mr. and Mrs. Samuel Icky of Spooner that their son had been killed. The date and the location of Coxswain Samuel Icky's death were not released. Mrs. Lois McClellan of Superior received word from the War Department that her husband was killed in action in Germany December the 5th. 33-year-old technician Reginald McClellan graduated from East High School, was a member of the First Presbyterian Church, worked at the Great Northern Ordnance. He entered the service in May of 43, was sent overseas just 3 months ago. He's survived by his wife and parents, two brothers, two sisters, all of Superior. A Bayfield couple now living in Superior have been notified that their son has been wounded in action. Mr. and Mrs. W.L. McCready have been told that their son, Staff Sergeant Kevin McCready, was wounded somewhere in Germany November the 6th. Two Japanese prisoners of war from Ashland have been able to send letters home. 26-year-old Lieutenant Robert Jones, the son of Mr. and Mrs. L.D. Jones, and 22-year-old Corporal Eugene Franklin, the son of E.H. Franklin, were both captured following the fall of Bataan in 1942. Both say that they're well. Ashland's new sheriff says that he'll modernize and use an aeroplane. KUWS Radio News reporter Mike Simonson has more from Ashland.
When Sheriff Frank Harris starts his new term in January, he'll have an airplane at his disposal, Lou. This will rank Ashland County with the most modern of sheriff's departments in Wisconsin. Ashland Airport Manager Paul Hoser will become a new deputy, so one of Hoser's planes will be available at all times for emergencies. Large letters reading Ashland County Sheriff's Department will be stenciled on the plane. Sheriff Harris says that there are a lot of advantages to having an aircraft. Often they're asked to search for missing craft on Lake Superior or Shawamigan Bay. This will be a much speedier and effective response than using boats. The plane will also be great searching for fishermen lost on the ice or people lost while hunting or berry picking. On another note, Sheriff Harris has appointed current Sheriff Julius Scherfinski his undersheriff. This is often the case when the incumbent has served his maximum of two consecutive terms. Sheriff-elect Harris is now the undersheriff, Lou.
Thanks, Mike. And finally, Jack and good listeners, we have the story of twins born in Odena, near Ashland, on different days. Baby X was born 10:30 Thursday night, but baby Y was born at 12:22 Friday morning at St. Joseph's Hospital in Ashland.
Wait a darn second here, Lou. What kind of names are X and Y?
Well, that's not their names. They haven't been named yet. I just use that like you would use it in a variable in math.
Oh, fine. Then X is equal to Y, or is Y greater than X?
If either of them have red hair, that would give that baby the advantage.
Oh, right. Lou Martin, the only red-haired newsman, and proud of it. Let's check our weather for this chilly Sunday night, December 24th, 1944. Low tonight, 5 below zero. Uh-oh. But clouding up tomorrow, so that means warmer temperatures and occasional snow, with a high tomorrow of 15 degrees. Hey, it's music time. Let's kick things off with Vaughn Monroe and Let It Snow on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and
I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
When we finally kiss goodnight, how I hate going out in the storm.
But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you love me so,
Vaughn Monroe and Let It Snow on Station KUWS. Hiya, Joe. I thought you had Saturday night off.
Engineer in charge, if you please. Well, not much to do tonight for us bachelors, anyway.
What happened to the girl at the drugstore soda fountain?
Let's just say that relationship fizzled. I'd rather be here than anywhere anyway tonight. For me, the Christmas season doesn't really get underway until those cute, fair and square kids come around with their stories. Then, oh, this is great. Uncle Bob reads The Night Before Christmas. So here I am.
All a twitter. The kids will be in next, folks, so stand by. Here's another fine holiday tune from Bingo Crosby and his hit movie, Going My Way. This is Tooraloo on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Try saying that song's name backwards.
Okay. Ar cool ar oo cool oo ar oot. How's that?
No, I meant Ralu Ralu Ratu.
Too Ralu Ralu Ralu. Too Ralu Ralu. Tooraloo-ra-loo-ra. Hush, now don't you cry. Tooraloo-ra-loo-ra. Tooraloo-ra-la. Tooraloo-ra-loo-ra. That's an Irish lullaby. Over in Killarney, many years ago, me mother sang a song to me in tones so sweet and low. Just a simple little ditty in her good old Irish way, and I'd give the world if she could sing that song to me this day. Bing Crosby and the John Scott Trotter Orchestra from the 1944 Hit Parade. That's Ar-ool, Ar-ool, Ar-oot on KEUWS.
I hate it when I walk in here sometimes.
That's a Tualua-lua-lua-lua-lua. Backwards, Mr. Grumpy.
I'm not grumpy. The Superior Servicemen Center will make sure the holiday spirit is there for our men in uniform. The center director, Mrs. Alba McQueen, says the Navy Mothers Club, the Hadassah, the Defense Mothers Club will have cookies and refreshments for servicemen. The Defense Mothers will have cigarettes for everybody.
Nice to have something from Mom, even if she isn't your own mom, for Christmas.
Hello, can we come in?
Hey, it's the Fair and Square Kids. Hey, kids.
Come on in.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Red Hair.
Merry Christmas to you.
Wow, neat place. Where's Uncle Bob?
Say, Uncle Bob's not here yet. What gives?
He's not coming tonight, kids. And Engineer Joe.
But it won't be Christmas without Uncle Bob.
There now, Gene. Don't you start crying.
She's right. It won't be Christmas without Uncle Bob.
Uncle Bob can't make it tonight, kids, but he says he's sorry.
Well, that just does that. Our daddies are away at war. There's shortages of everything, and even Santa Clauses are awful this year.
I'll say, the Santa at Fort Hopkins had terrible breath. And the one at Roth's had a beard that was shedding and had food in it.
You should have seen the poor excuse of a Saint Nick at City Market. He was more interested in eating sausages than listening to us. And he talked all funny. And he hicked up a lot, too.
Well, he probably came from Northern Brewery's Christmas party.
And now no Uncle Bob?
Ah, don't worry, guys. Uncle Bob asked a good friend of his to stop by in a few minutes, so hang around.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
And get your stories ready.
but I didn't bring a story.
He means the Fair and Square Kids.
Well, I knew that. Yeah, I knew that.
And here's one just for you kids out in Radioland. This is Harry Reaser, and Santa Claus is coming to town on the Ho 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 Show.
He took me to his workshop and told his plans to me. So you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout. I'm telling you why, Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been good or bad. So be good, for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why, Santa Claus is coming to town.
That's Harry Reaser and his orchestra with Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And kids, Santa will come if he likes your stories.
So you'd better have some good stories, guys.
Don't worry, Engineer Joe. You'll get to see Santa. Can I go first, Mr. Jack?
Yes, you may. This is Beverly Brunette of Solon Springs.
This is called Christmas Wishes for Three Things. Dear Santa, would you bring me a doll, one that opens and shuts her eyes, one with long golden curls that says Mama when she cries? I'd like to have a buggy so I can give my doll a ride, just so I could watch her and have her at my side. Would you also bring me a top that makes a pretty sound, have it hum a pretty tune as it goes round and round? I guess that's all, dear Santa, so I will say good night. If you don't bring me everything, it will be all right.
Very good, Beverly.
Ha! All that girly stuff. Hey, that's no fun. Right, Raymond?
I like those science kits.
Now you're talking. The ones with the powders and the batteries, huh?
You can make some really cool explosions.
Explosions aren't good, young man.
Sorry.
I am talking to Joe.
Raymond Andrews of Route 2 in Superior is next.
My poem is called Christmas Holiday, or No Teachers. Christmas holiday, almost here, the merriest time of the year. No books to study, no numbers to do, just running and playing the whole day through. We sit by the cheerful fire when the day is done, eating fudge and cracking nuts. Oh, we have fun. Sometimes Dad tells a story, and if it isn't too long, then we raise up the rooftop with a merry song. Yes, Mom and Dad sing with us. I wish you could hear. Yes, the Christmas holiday is the best all of the year.
Hey, these are great poems, eh, Lou?
Yeah, good enough to bring Santa, I hope.
My story will bring Santa. It's called Tommy Didn't Believe in Santa.
Well, let's hope that doesn't make Santa mad.
Little Tommy was a boy of 7. He lived with his mother and his sister, who was 10 years old. Their daddy was in the service. Tommy didn't believe in Santa Claus.
That darn Tommy could ruin it for all of us.
Yeah. On Christmas Eve, Mommy sent them to bed early. It was around midnight, and Tommy was still awake. He thought he heard a noise downstairs, so he went down and peeked around the curtain. It was Santa filling the stockings with toys and candy. He said to himself that he really believed in Santa now. The next morning, when Mommy awakened the children, Tommy told Mary he knew what he was going to get. They ran down the stairs, and there stood Daddy. They were so happy they danced with joy. Tommy said this was the best Christmas he ever had. The end.
See? Tommy was glad to know there really was a jolly old man like Santa Claus. And to think Daddy was home for Christmas. Well, that makes me a little emotional.
Wonderful story. Gene Shrivett of South Range.
Thank you, Mr. Jack.
Now you kids can go into the next room and get some cookies and apple cider.
Make sure it's not the cider that Axel keeps in the fridge.
Right. The apple cider that is warm on the table is for you.
All right.
What now? They're going to be expecting Santa Claus. And what's this all about, no Uncle Bob?
There better not be any shenanigans here.
Look at this.
Hey, a Santa suit.
Yeah.
And what's that?
And this.
Wow. Elf suits? Well, Santa's helpers. I get to be an elf.
I know it's a dream come true for you, Joe.
I am impressed. Very thoughtful, Jack. Say, how come there are two elf suits? Who else is going to be an elf? Oh, no. Newsmen don't play elves. Not this cowboy.
Ah, come on, Lou. Santa needs more than one elf. You don't have to say anything.
Oh, talking elf is fun. When you get to make your voice sound like this.
Another reason to say no.
And wear curly-toed shoes.
A second reason for saying no.
And you get to dance. Don't elves dance?
Well, the best ones do.
And that would be strike three. You two look just fine in your nice suits and tights. Here come the kids.
Great sugar cookies. Yum.
Hey, it's Santa.
Ho, ho, ho.
And the funniest looking elf I've ever seen. Real skinny.
Hey, kids. Then we can meet my brother elf, Louie.
These tights are killing me.
He's kind of a grumpy elf.
You think he's playing one of the seven dwarfs?
Gather round, my children, gather round, for Santa has a story to tell. But one of you hasn't told her story yet.
I'm kind of shy about reading my poem, Santa.
You promise you'll read your poem, Nora Kennedy, and I'll read my story now, and then we'll all have hot cider and sing Christmas carols.
Oh, boy! I mean, oh, boy!
Smooth.
Don't look now, but Mr. Grumpy has a run in his hose.
'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief with I in my cap had just settled down our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the roof there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. All way to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutter, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher! Now Dancer! Now Prancer and Vixen! On Comet! On Cupid! On Donner and Blitzen! To the top of the porch! To the top of the wall! Now dash away! Dash away! Dash away all! As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas, too. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed, whoa, like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A twink of his eye and a whisk of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, and his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew, like the down of a thistle. But I heard him explain, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Now, Nora Kennedy of Ingram, Wisconsin, it is your turn.
My poem is called The Same Star. When shepherds camped near Bethlehem, watched their sheep one cold, still night, they saw an angel host appear. They saw a star of brilliant light. They heard the song of their Lord's birth. They went to where the Christ child lay. They told the story over and over, all on that first sweet Christmas day. On Christmas Eve, this Christmas time, the carolers will sing once more. The story that each time is told seems sweeter than it was before, and shining on them from above and on the battlefield of war, and still as bright as when at first it shone the everlasting star.
I think I'm going to cry.
Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King, peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies, with angelic hosts proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King. Hail the heaven grants of peace, hail the Son of righteousness, light and life to all he brings, winds and healing in his wings.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1944, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Paul Guggenheimer plays foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan. Other performances by Duke Skorich, John Munsell, Don Hansen, Joel Anderson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1944 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.
We'd like to thank the Fair and Square Kids for making this Christmas special very special. The Fair and Square Kids were played by the very talented Katie Smith, Becca Smith, Chad Illikainen, and Jenna Illikainen. Merry Christmas.